Caroline Glick, Avigdor Lieberman, Israel's One-Man Wrecking Ball. By Caroline Glick on May 29, 2019. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party were unable to form a governing coalition within the 6 weeks prescribed by law, an outcome that seemed inconceivable 6 weeks ago, with a Likud stunning victory in Israel's April 9 general elections. And as a result, on September 17, Israeli voters will again go to the polls and again elect their representatives to the Knesset. In the meantime, Netanyahu will remain Israel's caretaker prime minister. The man responsible for Israel's political chaos is former Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman. Lieberman, a native of Moldova, leads the Yisrael Beitenu party, which he formed 20 years ago. His party won 5 seats in April in Israel's 120-seat Knesset. Although it is a paltry faction, its size was sufficient to block the formation of a government. Without Lieberman, Netanyahu had a coalition of 60, one short of a majority. This isn't Lieberman's first rodeo. Last November, Lieberman resigned his position in protest over Netanyahu's refusal to go to war with the Hamas regime in Gaza, after Hamas began pummeling Israel with rockets and mortars. He took his six-member faction with him. Although Israel's elections weren't scheduled until November 2019, with Netanyahu's governing coalition reduced to 61, Lieberman's resignation started the clock to early elections. Those elections, which took place in April, were called in January. In other words, by the time the next elections are held in September, Lieberman's refusal to work with Netanyahu will have left Israel without a stable government for 10 months. During the course of the coalition talks, Netanyahu offered Lieberman more than any minor political faction could have hoped to gain. Not only did Netanyahu agree to Lieberman's demand to return to the defense ministry with full executive powers, that is, with autonomy from prime ministerial veto, he was also offered the Ministry of Immigration and Absorption. All that was insufficient, however. Lieberman decided to stake his case for overthrowing Netanyahu on the mandatory conscription of ultra-Orthodox young men. For historical reasons, the vast majority of ultra-Orthodox men have received deferrals from Israel's universal draft. Over the past two decades, as ultra-Orthodox Jews became a larger percentage of the population, the public outcry over the inequality of burden-sharing grew louder. The issue has served as a rallying cry for non-religious Israelis across the electoral spectrum. Faced with this dilemma, in 2013, Netanyahu opted to form a government with center-left parties and exclude the ultra-Orthodox parties. The center-left leaders returned the favor, colluding with Lieberman to destabilize the coalition. Their actions forced Netanyahu to call early elections a year and a half after the government was formed. Lieberman formed his party to represent Israelis from the former Soviet Union, who immigrated to Israel en masse with the breakup of the Soviet Union. It is a shrinking demographic because as the years pass, the Israeli Jews from the former Soviet Union and their children have become integrated into mainstream Israeli society. In an effort to diversify his voting base, Lieberman embraced the ultra-Orthodox draft as a means to develop a new constituency among secular nationalists. The ostensible reason for his refusal to reach a coalition agreement with Netanyahu is his insistence that Netanyahu pass a draft law from the last Knesset that would require the ultra-Orthodox community to fill specific quotas of draftees annually. Lieberman's position made little sense on its merits. The ultra-Orthodox parties agreed, during the course of the negotiations, to fill draft quotas. But they insisted that the quotas be determined annually by the government, rather than by law. This made sense, since the Israel Defense Forces requirements change from year to year. By making the number of conscripts a function of a government decision, the number can be raised or lowered, depending on military requirements in a manner that would be impossible if the quotas are fixed in standing law. Lieberman's rejection of the ultra-Orthodox party's counteroffer is proof that his demand was not substantive. It was instrumental. Lieberman demanded something that made no sense in order to prevent anyone from giving him what he said he wanted. Lieberman did this because what he really wanted was to bring down Netanyahu, and so force Israel into another 3 months without a proper government, and force voters back to the polls just after they finished the last elections. Why was Lieberman so fixated on bringing down Netanyahu? The short explanation is that Lieberman hates Netanyahu. A longer explanation is that Lieberman and Netanyahu have a long history. They began as partners. When Netanyahu was first elected to Israel's premiership in 1996, Lieberman served as the general director of the Prime Minister's Bureau. The two men worked well together. But as a longtime associates of both men explained to Breitbart News, Lieberman got caught up in a criminal probe during that term and Netanyahu failed to assist him in the way he expected. In 2006, Ehud Olmert from the center-left Kadima party was prime minister. In July 2006, Hezbollah initiated a major war against Israel. During the six-week war, Iran's Lebanese proxy, Hezbollah, pummeled Israel with thousands of missiles, many of which reached central Israel. A million Israelis were forced to evacuate their homes in Israel's north. Olmert responded to Hezbollah's aggression by leading Israel in one of the most underwhelming military operations in its history. Olmert had no clear operational goal, sending troops into battle willy-nilly. They were under-equipped and poorly led by Olmert, his government and the IDF senior commanders. Israel failed to defeat Hezbollah. And in the aftermath of the war, Hezbollah not only restored its full control over South Lebanon, but it also won Lebanon's parliamentary elections in 2008 and proceeded to swallow the country. As soon as the ceasefire was reached and the soldiers were sent home, reserve officers and soldiers, furious over what had happened, began marching to Jerusalem to demand Olmert's resignation, along with the resignations of then-Defense Minister Amir Peretz and IDF Chief of General Staff Lieutenant General Dan Halitz. Opposition to Olmert was growing in his governing coalition. And it wasn't clear how he would be capable of remaining in office in light of his stunning failure in war. Netanyahu, then head of the opposition, seemed assured of returning to office that year. But in a move that shocked the public, Lieberman stepped in to save Olmert. Whereas Lieberman made demands on Netanyahu this month that were impossible to satisfy, when he saved Olmert in 2006, Lieberman did so without conditions. He served as minister without portfolio and brought in a Knesset faction with 11 members, thus ensuring Olmert governing stability until he was forced to resign on criminal corruption charges in 2008. In January 2009, Netanyahu replaced Olmert as prime minister. Lieberman served as his foreign minister until he was forced to resign after being indicted on corruption charges in 2012. In 2013, he returned to the foreign ministry and then colluded with the heads of two center-left factions to subvert Netanyahu. Netanyahu responded by bringing down his own government and going to early elections. In 2015, Lieberman refused to serve in Netanyahu's government. But he entered the government in 2016 to serve as defense minister. He then resigned in November 2018, forcing Israel to go to early elections this past April. But in truth, Lieberman has accomplished nothing in office. His party held the public security ministry, responsible for Israel's police, for 6 years. And his hand-picked public security minister did nothing to increase law enforcement among Israeli Arabs. Lieberman's policy for dealing with the Palestinians and Arab Israelis who reject Israel's right to exist is both unrealistic politically and militarily insane. Lieberman's policy is to give the Galilee, with its large Arab population, to the Palestinians, while incorporating Israeli communities in Judea and Samaria into Israel. The policy is based entirely on ethnic lines. If implemented, it would render Israel strategically non-viable and politically incomprehensible. While his position that Israel must do more to bring down Hamas's terror regime in Gaza is reasonable on its face, the question is, what would he have Israel do? Israel has no interest at present in restoring its control over Gaza. The move would be too costly in human lives. It would also be too costly diplomatically and financially, and the return on the investment would be dubious at best. Israel's current strategy, that is, Netanyahu's current strategy, of keeping Hamas perpetually weak while pushing for Egypt to permit Gazans to leave through the Egyptian border or work in the Sinai Peninsula makes much more sense in the long term. And, in fact, during his stint in the defense ministry, Lieberman signed on to Netanyahu's policies of keeping the conflict with Hamas on a low burner. It is hard to know how Lieberman's decision to force Israel to carry out new elections will impact his political future. There is a considerable constituency in the center that is motivated solely by its hatred for Netanyahu. In April, they voted for Blue and White, the main opposition party, led by three former IDF chiefs of staff and a former TV star. It is possible that a few of blue and white's Knesset seats will pass to Lieberman. And, together with one or two votes from Russian Israelis, he will again pass the four-seat threshold and return to the Knesset. But what is clear enough is that his determination to deny the people of Israel the government they elected will cost him with the political right. From now on, his party will no longer be considered a right-wing party. Netanyahu and Likud can be depended on to invest major resources in courting the vote of Russian-speaking Israelis. So, too, with what was presumed to be a clear mandate from the public, Lieberman's decision to prevent Likud governing has blocked it from enacting urgent legal reforms. The April elections centered on the need to restore checks and balances to Israel's judiciary and to subordinate the state prosecution to Israel's political leadership. Both institutions today rule Israel unencumbered by legal restrictions on their actions. Their ability to open criminal probes against political leaders, based on little to no evidence, has kept lawmakers in a perpetual state of paralysis. The elections in April settled the issue electorally. The public demanded judicial and legal reform. Lieberman's refusal to join the coalition has saved Israel's imperial judiciary and prosecution from any legislative check for the foreseeable future. Polls have yet to be taken to gauge the public's view of Lieberman's behavior, or of the fact that the country has now been forced into new elections. But it isn't difficult to sense the public's anger and frustration. Israelis voted for a right-wing government led by Netanyahu. They voted for that government because they wanted to be able to take full advantage of Trump's friendly administration. And they wanted to enact urgent reform of the legal fraternity. And now, due to one man's personal vendetta against Netanyahu, the Israeli public has been denied their right to a government.